An alle Aufsichtspersonen. Verteilen Sie jetzt die Aufgabenbogen für den Prüfungsteil Hörverstehen. Die Prüfung beginnt in 2 Minuten. An die Kandidatinnen und Kandidaten. Beschriften Sie jetzt das Deckblatt des Aufgabenbogens Hörverstehen. Achtung, lesen Sie die Aufgaben erst, wenn der englische Text beginnt. Kaufmännische Berufsmatura 2009, Kanton Zürich, Englisch, Serie 1. This part of the examination consists of 2 different listening comprehension tasks. There will be pauses before and after each task to give you time to read the questions and to check your answers. You will hear each task twice. Task 1. In the first part of the test, you are going to hear a radio program about the British pop culture. As you listen, fill in the gaps 1 to 10 in the notes below. In some gaps, more than one word is necessary for a complete answer. You now have 90 seconds in which to look at task 1. Ready?
Hello, I'm Michelle Wilson, and this is London Life. They are something of a British institution. They have their own specialised vocabulary, and there are over 6,000 of them in London alone. What am I talking about? Well, it's the good old pub, of course. Going to the pub is something that is quintessentially British. It's something that is part of our heritage, our culture, and it's an experience which isn't really the same anywhere else in the world. So first, what do we mean by a pub? The word pub is short for public house. A public house is a place where alcoholic drinks are sold for people to consume on the premises. What makes a pub and not simply a bar is that pubs usually have some kind of homely atmosphere. There might be lots of wood in the decor, carpets on the floor, and, if you're lucky, an open fire where you can sit with your drink and keep warm on a cold winter's night. Pubs are usually identified by a sign hanging outside. These signs were originally compulsory following a 14th century law which said that whoever was making beer to be sold had to hang out a sign. These days, most pubs are still marked by a sign hanging outside, and the names of pubs are also very traditional, like the King's Head, the Rose and Crown, and the Carpenter's Arms. There is a lot of specific vocabulary associated with pubs, and pub is not the only word they are known by. Booze is a slang word for alcohol, and so boozer is another word for a pub. A pub that you go to regularly, you call your local, and in your local, you are known as a regular. I'm pleased to have Dean Fetzer in the studio with me today. Dean Fetzer runs a website which provides a guide to and reviews of thousands of London pubs. So, Dean, what is it about the pub experience that makes it so special?
Well, it's not the beer that's the most important about going to the pub. It is important, but it's not the ultimate part of the experience. That's the overall environment, the customers and the people who work there. It's that that creates such a very social and enjoyable experience. What is more, in most pubs you can buy a wide range of alcohol and soft drinks, wines and spirits, but because most pubs have a connection with breweries, companies that brew or produce beer, that is the main product sold. There are many different beers and lagers. In Britain, if you order a beer, you get what is called bitter, a dark beer which is not very gassy. Lager is the golden drink with more gas that is more common in many other countries. So if this is what you want and you're in an English pub, be sure to ask for lager. And although you can buy beer and lager in a bottle, it's more usual for it to be served by a pump which brings up the drink from barrels in the cellars of the pub.
Tell me, Dean, are there any other words or phrases that are typically connected with the pub and its culture?
In Britain, beer and lager from the pump is sold in measures of a pint or half a pint, just those two. A pint is about half a litre. The word pint is very useful to remember. With British people, you can use it when suggesting a drink at the pub. For example, a very common phrase to use is this one. Fancy a pint? Fancy a pint. It means, would you like to come to the pub with me and have a drink? Quite a long sentence there, so it's useful to remember the short version. Fancy a pint? And of course, the word pint is used when ordering your drinks in the pub. A pint of bitter, please, or have a pint of lager, please. And if you don't want a pint, but a half pint, then we just use the word half. Half a bitter, please, half a lager, please. Finally, if you're going to an English pub, there's another thing to remember. Don't expect a waiter to come to your table and take an order, because it doesn't happen in a lot of them. Some are doing it now, but it's quite a new thing.
That's right. When ordering your drink in a pub, you go to the bar and speak directly to the person working behind the bar. There are no waiters coming to the tables to take orders. Well, that's all from this edition of London Life. I have to admit that I'm quite thirsty now. Anyone fancy a pint?
Now listen again and check your answers. Ready?
Hello, I'm Michelle Wilson, and this is London Life. They are something of a British institution. They have their own specialised vocabulary, and there are over 6,000 of them in London alone. What am I talking about? Well, it's the good old pub, of course. Going to the pub is something that is quintessentially British. It's something that is part of our heritage, our culture, and it's an experience which isn't really the same anywhere else in the world. So first, what do we mean by a pub? The word pub is short for public house. A public house is a place where alcoholic drinks are sold for people to consume on the premises. What makes a pub and not simply a bar is that pubs usually have some kind of homely atmosphere. There might be lots of wood in the decor, carpets on the floor, and, if you're lucky, an open fire where you can sit with your drink and keep warm on a cold winter's night. Pubs are usually identified by a sign hanging outside. These signs were originally compulsory, following a 14th century law, which said that whoever was making beer to be sold had to hang out a sign. These days, most pubs are still marked by a sign hanging outside, and the names of pubs are also very traditional, like the King's Head, the Rose and Crown, and the Carpenter's Arms. There is a lot of specific vocabulary associated with pubs, and pub is not the only word they are known by. Booze is a slang word for alcohol, and so boozer is another word for a pub. A pub that you go to regularly, you call your local, and in your local, you are known as a regular. I'm pleased to have Dean Fetzer in the studio with me today. Dean Fetzer runs a website which provides a guide to and reviews of thousands of London pubs. So, Dean, what is it about the pub experience that makes it so special?
Well, it's not the beer that's most important about going to the pub. It is important, but it's not the ultimate part of the experience. That's the overall environment, the customers and the people who work there. It's that that creates such a very social and enjoyable experience. What is more, in most pubs you can buy a wide range of alcohol and soft drinks, wines and spirits, but because most pubs have a connection with breweries, companies that brew or produce beer, that is the main product sold. There are many different beers and lagers. In Britain, if you order a beer, you get what is called bitter, a dark beer which is not very gassy. Lager is the golden drink with more gas that is more common in many other countries. So, if this is what you want and you're in an English pub, be sure to ask for lager. And although you can buy beer and lager in a bottle, it's more usual for it to be served by a pump which brings up the drink from barrels in the cellars of the pub.
Tell me, Dean, are there any other words or phrases that are typically connected with the pub and its culture?
In Britain, beer and lager from the pump is sold in measures of a pint or half a pint, just those two. A pint is about half a litre. The word pint is very useful to remember. With British people, you can use it when suggesting a drink at the pub. For example, a very common phrase to use is this one. Fancy a pint? Fancy a pint. It means, would you like to come to the pub with me and have a drink? Quite a long sentence there, so it's useful to remember the short version. Fancy a pint? And of course, the word pint is used when ordering your drinks in the pub. A pint of bitter, please, or have a pint of lager, please. And if you don't want a pint, but a half pint, then we just use the word half. Half a bitter, please, half a lager, please. Finally, if you're going to an English pub, there's another thing to remember. Don't expect a waiter to come to your table and take an order, because it doesn't happen in a lot of them. Some are doing it now, but it's quite a new thing.
That's right. When ordering your drink in a pub, you go to the bar and speak directly to the person working behind the bar. There are no waiters coming to the tables to take orders. Well, that's all from this edition of London Life. I have to admit that I'm quite thirsty now. Anyone fancy a pint?
That is the end of task one. You now have 30 seconds to check your answers. Now turn to task two. Task two. In the second part of the test, you are going to hear an interview with an officer who works for the British Secret Service. For questions 1 to 10, mark the best answer A, B or C. You now have 90 seconds in which to look at task two. Ready?
Hello, I'm Callum Robertson for the BBC World Service, and this is London Life. On the banks of the River Thames, at a place called Vauxhall, there's a very distinctive building. In the movies, this building is the home of James Bond. In real life, it's also the home of Britain's Secret Intelligence Service. The new James Bond film, A Quantum of Solace, is proving very successful at the box office. James Bond is an agent, a spy for the British Secret Service. He famously has a license to kill, official permission to kill people. But what is the job of a real Secret Service agent? Do they live as exciting and glamorous a life as James Bond does? And do they have a license to kill? I've recently had the opportunity to interview a real Secret Service officer, as they are known. Because of the job that the interviewed officer does, her true identity remains secret. Here's Officer A.
I'm an officer of the Secret Intelligence Service, which most people know as MI6, and is indeed the organisation that James Bond is supposed to work for. It's the organisation that collects secret intelligence overseas for the British government, unlike the Security Service, MI5, which is responsible for domestic security in the UK.
So, Officer A is an operational officer, and her job is to recruit sources, which means she gets people to work for her and give her information. The officer explains a little more about her role.
What I do is identify individuals who can provide, the intelligence that I need. And my job is to establish a relationship with them, and then to develop that relationship to the point where they are motivated to work with me and help me. It's basically about finding people and talking to them, communicating with them, and encouraging them to help us, to help the British government understand and reduce the threats that we all face.
So, this means Secret Service officers try to get information which will help the government stop attacks against the country. We've heard what the real officers do, but what about how they go about doing it? Do real MI6 officers have, like James Bond, a license to kill? Here's Officer A again.
No, I'm afraid that's a complete myth. The job of the service is to obtain intelligence to assist the government in preventing, for example, terrorist attacks. In all that we do, we work under UK law, and the work of the service is overseen both politically and legally. So there's absolutely no room for killing people.
So, is there anything about the job that is like the film character James Bond? What about other things like gadgets and people with letters for their job position? In the Bond films, the head of the service is known as M, and the man who provides all the gadgets is Q. Do they exist in reality?
We don't have an M, but we do have a C. That's what the chief of the service has been called since it was established back in 1909. And we also have a Q figure, whose team is responsible for innovative technology and gimmicks and gadgets and things like that. We do use technology, and some of it is pretty cool.
So, M is actually C, but Q does exist, and is responsible for gadgets. Well, that's all from our short look into the life of a real James Bond. And why did MI6 allow one of their officers to be interviewed? Well, they're trying to recruit new members of the service. They even have a website, if you're interested.
Now listen again and check your answers. Ready?
Hello, I'm Callum Robertson for the BBC World Service, and this is London Life. On the banks of the River Thames, at a place called Vauxhall, there's a very distinctive building. In the movies, this building is the home of James Bond. In real life, it's also the home of Britain's Secret Intelligence Service. The new James Bond film, A Quantum of Solace, is proving very successful at the box office. James Bond is an agent, a spy for the British Secret Service. He famously has a license to kill, official permission to kill people. But what is the job of a real Secret Service agent? Do they live as exciting and glamorous a life as James Bond does? And do they have a license to kill? I've recently had the opportunity to interview a real Secret Service officer, as they are known. Because of the job that the interviewed officer does, her true identity remains secret. Here's Officer A.
I'm an officer of the Secret Intelligence Service, which most people know as MI6, and is indeed the organization that James Bond is supposed to work for. It's the organization that collects secret intelligence overseas for the British government, unlike the Security Service, MI5, which is responsible for domestic security in the UK.
So, Officer A is an operational officer, and her job is to recruit sources, which means she gets people to work for her and give her information. The officer explains a little more about her role.
What I do is identify individuals who can provide, the intelligence that I need. And my job is to establish a relationship with them, and then to develop that relationship to the point where they are motivated to work with me and help me. It's basically about finding people and talking to them, communicating with them, and encouraging them to help us, to help the British government understand and reduce the threats that we all face.
So, this means Secret Service officers try to get information which will help the government stop attacks against the country. We've heard what the real officers do, but what about how they go about doing it? Do real MI6 officers have, like James Bond, a license to kill? Here's Officer A again.
No, I'm afraid that's a complete myth. The job of the service is to obtain intelligence to assist the government in preventing, for example, terrorist attacks. In all that we do, we work under UK law, and the work of the service is overseen both politically and legally. So there's absolutely no room for killing people.
So, is there anything about the job that is like the film character James Bond? What about other things like gadgets and people with letters for their job position? In the Bond films, the head of the service is known as M, and the man who provides all the gadgets is Q. Do they exist in reality?
We don't have an M, but we do have a C. That's what the chief of the service has been called since it was established back in 1909. And we also have a Q figure, whose team is responsible for innovative technology and gimmicks and gadgets and things like that. We do use technology, and some of it is pretty cool.
So, M is actually C, but Q does exist, and is responsible for gadgets. Well, that's all from our short look into the life of a real James Bond. And why did MI6 allow one of their officers to be interviewed? Well, they're trying to recruit new members of the service. They even have a website, if you're interested.
That is the end of task 2. You now have 2 minutes to check your answers. That is the end of the listening comprehension test. Stop writing and hand in your papers.